So today in the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class, we'll be discussing from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We are going to be focusing on the 12th verse or text number 12 from chapter 28 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 28 of the Srimad Bhagavatam canto 3 is titled as Kapila's Instructions on Devotional Service. Kapila's Instructions on devotional service. So the verse for today we'll recite together.
Yada manasvam virajam,
yada manasvam virajam,
yogena susamahitam,
yogena susamahitam,
kashtham bhagavato dhyayet, Svanashagravalokanah
Yada manasvam virajam
Yogena susamahitam Kashtham bhagavato dhyayet Svanashagravalokanah Yada manasvam virajam Yogena susamahitam Kashtham bhagavato dhyayet Svanashagravalokanah
Yada.
When.
Mana, the mind, swam,
own,
virajam, purified,
yogena,
by yoga practice,
susamahitam,
controlled,
kashtham,
the plenary expansion,
bhagavata,
the supreme personality of Godhead,
dhyayet,
one should meditate upon.
Svanasha agra,
the tip of one's nose.
Avalokanah,
looking at. Translation. When the mind is perfectly purified, by this practice of yoga, one should concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed eyes and see the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the mind is perfectly purified by this practice of yoga, one should concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed eyes and see the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. It is clearly mentioned here that one has to meditate upon the expansion of Vishnu. The word kashtham refers to Paramatma. I repeat, the word kashtham. Kashtham bhagavato dhyayet. The word kashtham refers to Paramatma, the expansion of the expansion of Vishnu. Bhagavata refers to Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Godhead is Krishna. From him comes the first expansion, Baladev. And from Baladev comes Sankarshan, Aniruddha, and many other forms, followed by the Purusha avataras. As mentioned in the previous verses, Purusharchanam. This Purusha is represented as the Paramatma or Super Soul. As mentioned in previous verses, a description of the super soul upon whom one must meditate, a description of the super soul upon whom one must meditate will be given in the following verses. In this verse, it is clearly stated that one must meditate by fixing the vision on the tip of the nose and concentrating one's mind on the kala or the plenary expansion of Vishnu.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatkrapatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudhirayet Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamashloke
Hare Krishna. When the mind is perfectly purified by this practice of yoga, one should concentrate on the tip of the nose with half closed eyes and see the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, we are in Srimad Bhagavatam 3rd Canto, Chapter 28, which is titled as Kapila's Instructions on Devotional Service. So before we begin, a quick context of what's happening in this section. The conversation or samvad between Lord Kapil Dev and his mother is continuing. And this verse is a part of that conversation between Lord Kapila and his mother Devahuti. Mother Devahuti has taken shelter of Lord Kapila, her own son. In that, Lord Kapila may show her the path of self-realization. Lord Kapila may guide her on how to cultivate detachment from material life. And more importantly, how to cultivate attachment towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's the goal of this conversation. As a part of that, we encounter this verse. Now, as I said before, we are in chapter 28. Now, if you look back three chapters and the flow of the Srimad Bhagavatam that's coming across, we'll see that chapter 25 is titled as the Glories of Devotional Service. Chapter 26 and 27 are titled as Principles of Material Nature and Understanding of Material Nature. And now chapter 28 is Instructions on the Execution of Bhakti or Devotional Service. This is because despite knowing the glories of bhakti, which was explained in chapter 25 itself, because we are all what is called as tatastha shakti, we are all belonging to the marginal potency of the Lord, we sometimes struggle in executing our devotional service the way it should be done, the way it is prescribed by the acharyas, simply because of the workings of our own mind. Though we are part and parcels of the Lord, still we struggle. Mamai vamsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana mana shashthan indriyani prakriti sthani karsati. Despite being part and parcels of the Lord, the soul struggles with its own mind. Therefore, Lord Kapila did not stop just by glorifying devotional service as a process, but he is actually following it up by explaining to Devahuti how material nature works very smoothly to take the jiva away from devotional service. We never realize that we are slowly falling down day by day. Sometimes we may not realize that at all. And after a long time, we think, okay, where was I and where did I come now? So this is the graph of many devotees. Starting from the initial enthusiasm, then the state of steadiness, and then some kicks here and there, some fall down, again some realizations, lifting ourselves again, and that's how the jiva gradually progresses on the path of Godhead. Most of us. So, because this mind is the one which gives us congratulatory messages on our advancement, which is very dangerous for us, for the soul. So this mind has to be somehow made our friend. So it always takes us further in the process of Krishna Bhakti rather than make us retrograde from where we are. So this aspect of mind control therefore becomes very important for practitioners of all types of yoga, what to speak of practitioners of Bhakti Yoga. So if one has to control one's mind, one has to know how the mind operates. If we have to control an airplane, we have to know first of all how the aircraft operates. Which lever to press such that the flight goes up, which lever to press such that the, which button to press such that the tires come down, how to adjust the altitude, speed, when to land, what speed, what angle, even the wind. So there's a lot of dynamics around controlling an airplane. Similarly, there are a lot of dynamics that control the mind, that make the mind operate in a particular way. And that's why Lord Kapila, after explaining the glories of devotional service, is spending two chapters, investing two chapters, 26 and 27, in making her understand the principles of material nature, how the mind operates and how the mind rules us gradually. And now, in this chapter, he is giving the process by which to control that mind. Now, it should be noted here that as much as if you go through the verses from 1 to today's verse, which is verse number 12, if you see the flow, the process to control the mind, which is Ashtanga Yoga, is being explained by Kapila Muni to Devahuti. Now, Ashtanga Yoga has got many aspects, starting with Yam Niyam, what should be done, what should not be done, followed by Pratyaha, Dharana, and so on and so forth, till the stage of Samadhi. Now, as much as Lord Kapila Muni is explaining to his mother all these individual processes, if you see the earlier verses, you will see that flow clearly coming through. It is in the last verse, yesterday's verse, which was explained very nicely by His Grace Vajrakrishna Prabhu, and in today's verse, he is coming to the point of mind control. Lord Kapila Muni, in yesterday's verse and today's verse, is emphasizing that this mind control is not an end in itself. Mind control has to be done, no doubt about it. But simply because one controls the mind, that is not a sufficient criteria with regard to the definition of self-realization. Mind control is a step. It's a big milestone, but it's not an end in itself. This mind, after being controlled, should be dovetailed in meditating on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the central point of today's verse. So, Lord Kapildev is reiterating the goal that one has to ultimately not only control the mind, but then having controlled the mind, one has to focus all energies in meditating on the form of the Absolute Truth. So the word form is very important. on the form of the Absolute Truth. Now, in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Canto 1, in Text 2, the Paribhasha Sutra, or the emperor verse of the Vedas, comes across in verse number 11. Vadanti tat tattva vidas, tattvam yajnanam advayam, brahmeti paramatmeti, bhagavaniti shabdhyate. So it is mentioned that the Absolute Truth is understood in three features. One is the impersonal feature, which is called as the Brahman, which is the formless aspect of the Absolute Truth. The second feature is the form aspect of the Absolute Truth, which is Paramatma or Super Soul, which is the central subject matter of today's verse. And then the third is the Bhagavan aspect of the Absolute Truth, which is not only the form, but relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, these are the three aspects of the Absolute Truth. And today, we'll be focusing on the Paramatma or the Super Soul aspect. Now, it's interesting to see that after this verse, after this entire chapter, in fact, where Lord Kapila has already now instructed his mother on the glories of devotional service, on the principles and understanding of material nature, he has instructed her on the execution of bhakti, he again goes back and starts explaining how the external energy functions and how it sometimes makes us to karma kand or fruitive activities and makes us lose track of the goal. So if you see, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam vacillates between pure bhakti, again it goes back to how the material nature works, again it comes back to the subject of bhakti, again it goes back to how the material nature works, and that's how it flows. And that's intended, because that is how our lives are. On some days, we feel very enthusiastic to do bhakti. On some days, that handbag in Maya attracts us. On some days, again we feel, no, I should be detached. Or Boxing Day sale attracts us, and we start meditating on, buying various things, improving the quality of our material life. Again, we get some slaps. Again, we come back to devotional life. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam is also flowing, following such a flow. And it gives us how material nature attracts us from various angles by explaining to us pastimes of various practitioners of Krishna consciousness who have been in similar situations. Now, in this chapter, if you again study the instructions of Kapila Dev, the flow of this chapter from the first verse up until now, you will find that it is very similar to Rupa Goswami's instructions in the Nectar of Instruction or the Upadesha Amrit. So, Lord Kapila Muni is explaining what is favorable, what is unfavorable, yam, niyam. He is explaining to his mother that one should execute one's prescribed duties and one should not unnecessarily poke one's attention in what is not one's duty. One should not engage in mundane religious activities or karma kanda. One should abstain from sex life and practice celibacy. One must be clean in body and mind. One must engage in the study of the scriptures. One must live a simple life. One must follow silence, and so on and so forth. And then, having explained all that, then he's coming to the next aspect. One having explained yam and niyam, he's now coming to the asana aspect and the pranayama aspect. He goes into asana, pranayam, and the other aspects of Ashtanga Yoga. What is the central idea of the focus of Lord Kapila Dev? The central idea is that to practice any form of yoga, yoga comes from the word yuj, which means to connect with the Supreme. To practice any form of yoga, it is very important to have a healthy body and a healthy mind, which means the gross body should be taken care of, because it's a vehicle for liberation. And then the subtle body, which governs the gross body, more so ever should be taken care of. So, the importance of physical health and mental health in one's progress towards the Absolute Truth is underscored in these verses. So, thus, we see that Lord Kapila Dev is talking about moderation in eating, exercising regularly. When you talk about asanas, he's talking about various postures, which in English we call as exercises. Controlling the life air. He talks about controlling the life air, the various types of vayu, prana, apana, samana, and so on and so forth. So, where prana vayu is primarily responsible, which governs the intake functions in a body. The apana vayu, sorry, the samana vayu aids the digestive functions in the body. The apana vayu aids in functions which eliminate things from the body, such as urine and stool and the menstruation and so on and so forth. So it's very important to understand these aspects, so that one, armed with this understanding, can then one take care of one's subtle gross body and subtle body. So in the last verse and today's verse, Lord Kapil Dev is coming to the point of the whole exercise. But what is the point of the whole exercise? That if one's subtle body and gross body is well, then one has to then concentrate one's thought on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or rather, the wellness of the subtle body and the gross body helps one to focus on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in his divine purports, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that Lord Kapiladev is specially mentioning the localized aspect. When he says concentrate, focus on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in this verse he is mentioning on the localized aspect or the Paramatma aspect of the Absolute Truth. Now, we will discuss something around, some important points around Paramatma or the Super Soul. The Super Soul is, in one sense, a very beautiful aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of the Absolute Truth. In fact, it is one aspect where the love of God as the Supreme Father unto all His children comes across. For example, when a child goes to school for the very first time, many of the mothers will validate this, or will agree with this, that when the child goes to school for the very first time, the mother is used to seeing the son or the daughter in front of their eyes all the time. One day, it dawns that now the child has to be on his or her own, in a completely alien environment. So when the child goes to school for the very first day, I know in India how it happens, that there is a school bus which comes, and I don't know how many schools have school buses, but I believe many schools have. So the school bus comes, and the mother drops the child in the school bus. I remember my own first day in the school bus, I was crying and I got off. Then my mother had to take me physically to school. And then what happens is that the child is uncomfortable with the whole process. The mother is doubly uncomfortable. Okay. So the mother is always feeling, okay, what has happened to my child? Is my child well? Has my child eaten? And so on and so forth. Has my child got hurt in playing somewhere? So what happens is the mother does not rely only on the school bus. So the mother actually starts following the school bus in a vehicle, initial days at least, till she gets complete faith. And then the mother is standing in the school till the bell rings. And then the child is sitting in the bus, and then the mother says okay, and then the mother receives the child. So this is the super soul aspect, if you take this analogy, is the love of the Supreme Lord. The Lord knows that this soul, my dear child, you have rebelled against me now, and you want to go to a very dangerous place where padam padam vipadam natesham, where at every step there is danger. So I am not going to leave you alone there to rot. Okay, I am going to come with you. A part of me is going to be always with you, guiding you, protecting you all the time, telling you what are the right things to do. And when, because you are tatastha shakti, you may tend to take your face away from me, but my dear, I am there with you all the time to tell you, no, don't go that direction. I'll always be the voice with you, which will tell you, which will inspire you, instruct you to come back into my arms. So this is the love aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one of the love aspects of the Lord. So the Paramatma, in one sense, is the escort of the soul in material existence. Canto 11 of Srimad Bhagavatam, where after the Uddhava Gita and few other chapters, in the Bhakti Yoga section, there is a beautiful verse which says, Yo antar bahis tanu bhritam ashubham vidhunvan acharya chaitya vapusa swagatim vyanatti. Which means, my dear Lord, you appear in two features. My Lord, you appear in two features. Externally you appear as the acharya, and internally you appear as the super soul. Why? To deliver the embodying living being by directing him on how to return to you. The Lord appears within the heart as the super soul and externally both as the spiritual master and his literary incarnation. The supreme Vedic knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So the spiritual masters, the scriptures and Paramatma all work together to take us back to Godhead. In fact, the Lord also accompanies the soul life after life. So when the soul leaves the body, along with the subtle body, the super soul also comes along with us into our next body. So in that sense, the super soul is even guiding the ghosts, which temporarily are not getting a body for themselves. So it's very important for us to understand how to perceive the super soul. How to understand that the super soul is our true friend. In the Sankhya Yoga section, the various elements of which the body is comprised, they are described. So the super soul is sometimes described as the 26th element. The Bhagavad Gita, when Lord Krishna is explaining to Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in the 13th chapter, text 24 and 25, gives some understanding of the importance of the super soul. In the verse, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, one who understands this philosophy, it's important to understand how the material nature works and how the super soul guides us systematically out of this grip of material nature. So Lord Krishna says in 24 and 25, hey Arjuna, one who understands this philosophy concerning material nature, the living entity and the interaction of the modes of nature, one who understands these dynamics is sure to attain liberation. He will not take birth here again regardless of his present position. So it's very important to understand these dynamics. And that's why Kapil Muni is following that flow, which Lord Krishna is also followed that flow in one sense with Arjuna. In text 25, then Lord Krishna is saying, some perceive the super soul within themselves through meditation. So how to now understand the super soul? Some perceive through meditation. Others perceive the super soul through the cultivation of knowledge. So dhyana yoga and jnana yoga. And still others through working without fruitive desires. Nishkama karma yoga. So the Paramatma can be perceived by all these methods. However, because we are in Kali Yuga, Srila Prabhupada gives us the practical way by which we can understand the super soul. Srila Prabhupada tells us what is real knowledge, Raja Vidya. So Prabhupada explains that we think that just because we try to gain some control over matter, then we'll become successful in material life. But Srila Prabhupada says that trying to control matter is ignorance, because real knowledge is to understand that we are not the controllers of matter, rather we are being controlled by the material elements. Once we understand this, then we'll know that we are not independent in this material world, and then the desire for liberation will manifest in our hearts. So the success formula for escaping this material world is to understand that we are not the controllers, and that is the primary role of the Paramatma or the super soul, which accompanies the jiva in this dangerous place called as the material world. Now, His Holiness Hridayananda Maharaj has given a very nice story. So we'll discuss this story by which we'll really understand how beautiful this aspect of super soul is. So Maharaj explains the story of a gentleman whose name is John Urban. So this John Urban, he wanted to be a controller. He wanted to enjoy this material world. So what he did was, he visited an aerial city. He thought, in an aerial city, I'll enjoy. Just like for many of us, when we ask what's very favorite to you, they say it's flying. I like flying because I like to see everything from the top. So there is a desire to... So John Urban also has a desire to not only view the earthly planet from the top, but he actually wanted to live in an early aerial city. So with that inclination, he started his journey of enjoyment. But soon he realized that it didn't give him whatever he wanted. So he said, let me try the aqua city, which is under the water. Let me try that. He did not find much happiness there also. So finally, he came to a very unique city, which was quite advanced and unique. And he started living in this city. And we will find out what the city is. So he started living in this city. The city was, he had heard that this city is a very advanced city. So he came here. Now, the beauty in this city for John Urban was that many people in this city, most people in this city, treated him as their master. And John Urban was very happy because he was getting shelter in this city. Plus, he was getting control in this city. When people respect you, then you have some kind of a control over those people who respect you. Okay. So he was getting shelter, he was getting control, he was getting respect. So he was very happy. So as he was living there very happily, he saw one day that there were some soldiers in the city who were wandering about here and there. The soldiers used to do their daily march past every day. Some soldiers were dressed in black and some soldiers were dressed in white. So one day, John Urban summoned his cabinet, the court assembly if you like, and he wanted to find out what are the soldiers up to. You know, they are marching here and there. Of course, nobody was able to explain to him very clearly what this is. But collectively they came to a decision that whatever it is, these soldiers are dressed in black and white. They add some color, kind of color to the whole city. So maybe these soldiers, the purpose of these soldiers is to enhance the beauty of this city and to add some spice into the life in that city. Just like when, you know, some of the devotees were doing Harinam in London, they were caught and, you know, one envious person took them to the court. So in the court, what happened when the judge came and then he saw them, these devotees were dressed in saffron robes. So the judge actually dismissed the whole case and ruled in favor of the devotees, saying that in a dull city like London, these people are adding color to the city. So actually the judge dismissed the whole case. So John Urban had the same logic. He said that these soldiers, they are, of course, that was a real logic of the judge. But John Urban, he was referring to these soldiers who were in black and white. He said they also add color to this city. And everyone had that understanding and they didn't delve too much into the importance of these soldiers. Now the soldiers also served John Urban beautifully. They could even make the weather change for John Urban. They could make the sun hotter, they could take him to scenic places, they could take him to the best restaurants in the city where John Urban could enjoy the way he wanted. So as John Urban was wandering around in his city enjoying himself, one particular day, he went to a place which was somewhere in towards the end of the city, in one corner of the city. He visited there. And when he was walking across, he saw a board in one corner. In that board, it was written City Academy. It was a university, just like you have to go. It's written Monash University. So it was written City Academy there. Now, none of the cities that John Urban had visited earlier ever had such a board. He never saw such a university, City Academy. So he was very inquisitive. So he went inside to see what's going on here. And when he went there, he saw a young lady who was doing some work. So as soon as John Urban saw this young lady, she said, "Hi John, how's it going?" Was kind of shocked. How come you know my name, who I am? And as soon as I entered, you called me as if you always knew me. She said, no, I've been waiting for you. I'm your friend, John. I have been knowing you since so many cities that you have visited. My name is Buddhi. I take care of City Academy." So as soon as John Urban heard this, he was very pleased. And immediately he asked some questions to this lady Buddhi. He asked some questions about some aspects which he could not understand. One of the questions which was bothering him always, who are these soldiers? These soldiers were 365 in number. So he asked, who are these soldiers? They're such nice people. They supply me whatever I want. They're keeping me so happy. Really, they are completely under my control. So as soon as he mentioned this to this lady, Buddhi, Buddhi responded to him saying, "Sorry, John, I think there's a big flaw in your understanding. These are actually not your soldiers. Neither are these soldiers under your command. These soldiers are part of CTC. What is CTC? Central Time Command. These are under their jurisdiction. You are not their controller. They report to the Central Time Command. And this CTC department has posted them in all the cities. And at the end, these soldiers have been instructed to destroy your city." So John Urban was very shocked, because the behavior of these soldiers, the kind of respect they gave him, he was saying, not possible. You know, this lady seems to be envious. No. John Urban told this lady, not possible. You are telling me that these soldiers will attack me one day and finish me, and that's what they have been instructed? No, 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 not possible. I know. Whenever I have had some problem, these are the soldiers who have protected me always. How come you are saying that these are my enemies and not my friends? I have complete faith in these soldiers. Maybe you are not my friend. Maybe you are envious. And that's why you want to come in the way of my relationship with these soldiers who are serving me so nicely. And saying so, he left that place immediately. He left the city academy. And he went to another place now. As he was wandering, he came to this place which was, there was a board there called as Meta Forest. So he came to this place. Now this forest was full of dry trees and leaves and twigs, which were drying up almost to the point of death. These trees were. They were drying up. Interestingly, as he was wandering through this place, atop one of the trees, he saw a man was sitting. This tree was already drying up, but on top of it was man was sitting, and he had a water gun in his hand, and he was busy watering the tree from the top. And he was, and once he finished watering the tree from the top, he used to climb down. Again, he used to go to another tree and again water the tree from the top. So John Urban called his guys, "Hey, come down. What are you doing?" He said, "I'm watering the tree." He said, "It's common sense that if you have to water a tree or nourish a tree, you have to pour the water in the roots." So as soon as John Urban explained this to him, that man said, "Oh, that's the old way of doing things. This is the modern way of doing things. This is what modernism says." As he was evangelizing thoughts of modernism, one tree broke and fell down. As he was speaking this, one tree fell down. Obviously, then one tends to lose one's credibility. But no, this guy was still confident. He says, "Sometimes there are successes and sometimes there are failures. It's part and parcel of life. One tree falls down, but look at the other trees. I'm watering them so nicely. So are they not standing? So one day, definitely, you know, those trees will become green again as I continue to water these leaves and twigs. One or two anyway always dies. So why are you looking at only one of those, one or two trees like that?" So John Urban failed to convince this guy. But having said this to that guy, John Urban started introspecting and thought about himself. He said, "Maybe I am also doing something similar to what this guy is doing." And then questions started coming to John Urban's mind. What is the root of my own existence? Who made this city? Just like other cities, will this city also get destroyed? So these are the kind of thoughts he had in mind. As if to reinforce his thinking, one day, John Urban came across a rumor in his kingdom. The rumor was all across the palace, and when he heard this rumor, he was shocked. What was the rumor he heard? He heard that people are talking in his kingdom that he was no longer the king of the city. As soon as he heard this rumor, he got very scared. So he went right back to City Academy to meet that lady once again, who is called as Buddhi. So Miss Buddhi. And Miss Buddhi, when he told this about this rumor, she said, yes, I always knew that. I told you that earlier also. You didn't believe me. So she said, when she said that, then John Urban asked her, but then this is a rumor going on. You also told me, now what should I do? You know, because I don't want to get kicked out of my own city. I was very happy. So can I not, you know, please tell me how, what should I do, next steps? You know, but I'm getting this feeling, I'm pretty sure I'll get kicked out. So find, tell me something, some way by which, you know, I can get some more direction in my life. So she says, there is a friend of mine, Buddhi told him, there is a friend of mine who is staying right in your palace, in one of the chambers. That person is my friend. You go and contact him. So John Urban said, hang on, I know this friend of yours who stays in one of the chambers in my palace. I know this friend. But whenever I go there, there's a lot of light coming out from that room. So therefore, I don't feel very comfortable going there. Whenever I go to that chamber, I get this feeling that I am not the controller. So therefore, you know, I don't want to go to that room. I don't feel like going to the room. It gives me this feeling as if I am not the supreme in my palace. So this is very similar to an incident which happened in the Ramayana. Ravana, obviously out of his lust, he wanted to acquire Sita Devi. So Ravana tried all tricks in the book to win over Sita Devi. So one day, he even went to the extent of creating a illusory head, severed head of Lord Ramachandra. And he went to Sita and said, look, now are you convinced that your husband is dead? Now you can be mine. So, before this, and then obviously Sita was not convinced at all. Because she knew nobody could kill her, Lord Ramachandra. But still, of course, out of sentiment, she was expressing some mood. But, so this was one of the tricks of Ravan. But Mandodari had given another idea before this to Lord Ravan. Yet another idea to approach. She said that doing like this, then you can try this approach. And what was the approach that she gave him? She said, instead of the severed head of Lord Ramachandra, why don't you take the form of Lord Ramachandra and go to her? If you take the form of Lord Ramachandra and go to Sita, she'll be yours. Because she'll see you as Lord Ramachandra and you can enjoy her. So Ravana told Mandodari, do you think I'm a fool that I did not think of this idea? This was the first idea I thought of. You know, that I can go take the form of Lord Ramachandra. But then he said, the yogic process of taking somebody's form is that you have to intensely meditate on that form. Then you can take that form. And I tried that. I meditated on the form of Lord Ramachandra. And every time you do that, my lusty tendencies towards Sita goes away. So therefore, I stopped going in that direction. I don't want to be enlightened thinking of mother's, of Sita as my mother. So every time I get this kind of purification when I think, I don't want that. I want to enjoy. So I have stopped going. So similarly, here was John Urban who was telling Buddhi that this friend of mine who is sitting in the chamber, too much light comes out, too much, somewhere I am thinking, not the control. Therefore, I have stopped going there. So I could not approach this innermost chamber. So Buddhi told him, don't worry, John. You don't know who he is. He is your forgotten true friend. He is not your bogus friend. He is your real friend. He will not exploit you when you go to him. He will not try to take over your kingdom. So John Urban hears all this. So he understands that there is some friend. But still, he knows that, okay, she has told me he's a real friend, but still that faith is not there. So he goes back to his city and completely forgets and starts enjoying himself yet again in that city. In few days, he found that the soldiers were no more behaving in the way that he wanted. In fact, earlier, if you see, the soldiers are escorting him better wherever he wants to go. Whichever city he wants to go, the soldiers used to salute him and open the gates. Many times, you know, we also like that, you know, someone saluting us and opening the gate for us. That's called as body corporate fee. In the skyscrapers, you know, they charge you, for the concierge desk in your own house. In your own apartment basement, there will be somebody sitting there. And then you have to pay through your pockets to get that respect every time you go. So, these soldiers used to open the gates for him every time. But now, they stopped opening the gates for him. And they started telling him, no, sorry, this gate is closed. You can't enter this. So, John Urban used to go to some other gate, thinking that, he can get into this, he can enjoy the city more. And sometimes the soldiers said, sorry, this gate is also stopped right now. Because there are some repairs going on in this gate, so you can't go. So one day, he met the commander of these soldiers. And he asked the commander of these soldiers, look, Mr. Commander, initially you used to make way for my enjoyment by opening these gates, but now you are blocking each of these gates one by one. Are you really under me or are you under someone else's control? Am I your boss or someone else is your boss? And then the commander told him the same thing which Buddhi told him. He said, we were never yours. We were never under your command. We were simply following the orders of CTC or the Central Time Command. As soon as he heard this, he was very upset, John Urban. He came back and he organized a cabinet meeting with his people. He said, let us now attack these soldiers and remove all these soldiers from the city. So tomorrow, all of you come and hear my address. And in his address the next day, he said, dear citizens of my kingdom, this is my city. This is my city. In fact, what to speak of? This is my city. I am this city. And I plan to operate on all your buildings and I will take control of all these buildings, these gates, and I will ensure that everything is in order. So this is how he started from that point in time addressing the city. Eventually leading to his downfall. Because the inevitable was to happen. So this is a beautiful allegory. Allegory. Something which is, told in a very different way, conveying the truth. So what is the meaning which His Holiness Hridayananda Swami Maharaj so beautifully has mentioned? The city, what does it represent? It represents our body. Who are the soldiers? Under the control of the Central Time Command, they are our senses. They are our senses. And who is John Urban? We, the soul. The soul which is going through different bodies. Sometimes we took aerial bodies, that of a bird. Sometimes we took the body of a fish under the water. And now we have been given a body which has Navadvaram or 9 gates of pleasure. But with time or Kal, Central Time Command, each of these gates gets blocked up. The eyes cannot see, the ears cannot hear. This body which used to give us pleasure to that extent where we thought we are the controllers of our body, it gradually starts giving up on us, on the soul. So, as that happens, we visit the not everyone, some people visit the northern part of this body which is called as the intelligence. What is it? City Academy. Sometimes we visit that. Once in a while, we go there. At least by that, we come to know that the soldiers are getting heavier and heavier on us. So, the Buddhi guides us in this manner. So, when John Urban went to saw this inevitable death, one last time he went back again to Miss Buddhi. This time Buddhi took him to a lake. She said, you have seen the Metta forest. Now you have seen your own city anyway. Now I'll take you to a lake. So as John Urban goes to that lake, he sees that there are a lot of children who are crying. He could hear children's crying on the edge of the lake. So as he goes closer, he sees that on the edge of the lake, he found that there was a mango tree with a lot of beautiful mango fruits atop that tree. But the children could not reach these fruits. So rather what these children were doing, they were seeing a reflection of the fruits of this tree in the lake. So they said, we can't reach up, but we can at least go in and try to grab the mango here. So that's what they were trying. They were actually very hungry, these children. And they actually wanted these mangoes. But they were searching for it in the reflection of the water. So when Buddhi showed him this, John Urban contemplated on this and asked the intelligence, asked Buddhi, is the city in which I am living, is that also a reflected city? He asked her. She said, yes. Yes, it's a reflected city. Now you go with this understanding and meet your forgotten friend who is in the inner chambers of your palace. Don't think that if you can get over your sense of proprietorship, because when you meet this friend, you will get over your sense of proprietorship. Don't be afraid of that. Don't think that if you get over your sense of proprietorship, you will be unhappy. Go and boldly approach this friend of yours. So this is what in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is also telling in chapter 13, text 24. He says, if you understand him, if you understand the super soul or Paramatma, who is the real enjoyer and controller, you will be released from this city and you will no longer have this anxiety. So this is the story of John Urban and this is the story of Paramatma, who is the friend, who is our real friend. The question comes now, how to meet this friend? How to meet this Paramatma? Now because of ego, false ego and covering, we cannot, with the dint of our own efforts, covered with false ego, we have no chance of meeting this Paramatma, which is what Lord Kapildev is telling. Meet, focus on the tip of your nose and then meditate on Paramatma. It's very difficult for all of us to do that because we are struggling with our mind. Therefore, how to meet this friend? So therefore, we have been given the process of Bhakti Yoga, which tells us how to meet this friend, which is through the medium of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, through which we can overcome the barriers of meeting this Paramatma. So that is the way of meeting this friend. And what is not the way of meeting this friend? What is the wrong way of meeting this friend? An example is given of how, after understanding just the principles of Sankhya Yoga, someone tried to meet this Paramatma, having had some realization, part realization. So the example is given of His Grace Gurudas Prabhu, who was Srila Prabhupada's disciple. Gurudas Prabhu used to hear Srila Prabhupada's lecture, very intimate servant of Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada often used to lecture, in his lectures he said, we are not this body. So Gurudas Prabhu said, I'm hearing this every now and then. How do I, understand that I am not this body? So Srila Prabhupada said, no, you have to be very confident that you are not this body. So Gurudas Prabhu understood it in a certain way. So he said, okay, I put full faith in these instructions. So what I'm going to do is, I'm very confident, I'm going to tell myself, give self-suggestions to myself, I am not this body, I am not this body, I am not this body. And if I am not this body, then I'm going to walk right through that wall. So he, with this confidence, he started walking. As he started walking, with full confidence when he went, he banged against that wall and he got a bump on his head. Okay. When he got a bump on his head, he said, oh, now I understand. Maybe when Srila Prabhupada says, I am not this body, Srila Prabhupada is not his body. So that was a kind of understanding. So through this kind of a philosophical speculation, one cannot understand the aspect of Paramatma. So we cannot meet this Paramatma directly by just by jnana. So we need to find someone, we need to find that person who has broken the barriers and who is allowed entry, who has been allowed entry into the innermost chambers of that palace, who has really understood Paramatma. So we need to go to a Tattva Darshi of that sort, and then that person can tell us how to meet that Paramatma. Another example is given. This is the story of a thief who once went to a palace. This thief wanted to become very wealthy. So once he heard that the king has announced, he has called a meeting where he has called different people. He has called different subjects in his kingdom. Specifically the sadhus and the yogis he has called there. And the king has said that all of you come and I am going to present my beautiful daughter to all of you. And whoever genuinely wants to marry my daughter, he can take my daughter. As simple as that. Not only that, I'll provide enough wealth along with my daughter so you don't have to make money. Now who wouldn't like this proposition? You're getting a beautiful wife. On top of that, you don't have to go to office on Monday. You've got all the facilities to enjoy. So why not? So this thief heard this advertisement. He saw this and he said, I mean, I don't even have to steal now. Wealth is coming to me. In Hindi, we say neki or pooch pooch. I wanted it and you are inviting me. So definitely, why not? I'll come. I'll definitely come. But I'll come in the garb of a saintly person, because that was the criteria. The king had invited the sages and the yogis. So here the thief went. But out of his humility, or rather fear, the thief sat behind, because he still couldn't sit with the sages. There's some kind of a disconnect. Just like when you go into a place, you try to sit next to someone where you're comfortable, of your own kind. And the sages and the yogis were not of his kind. So he couldn't even sit with them in the front row. So the sages and yogis occupied the front row. So the king made his proposition. Thank you very much for coming, all of you. Today this is my proposition. This is my beautiful daughter. And he brought his beautiful daughter. And the sages were all looking. The yogis were looking at her. And he said, whoever wants to take her right now, she'll come with you. And here is the check. Gold coins. Whatever it was. Here is all the wealth. Half the wealth of the kingdom was given along with the wives. You can take it. So the sages just were looking at the king very blankly. And then after that they got upset actually with this proposition. They said, you called us here, we thought, we're going to have some nice Krishna Katha. We're going to, called us for something very superior. But this is the reason you called us, so we are not interested. Thank you for the invitation. So the entire front row was empty. They all left. Then the yogis came. And as they moved, the thief also started moving along with them. The front row. Like that. But he was all the time sitting with them. So the yogis came and then the king made his proposition. The yogis also said, no. We thought you were going to talk about self-realization. And how is this going to help us in detaching ourselves from this material world? This is not our goal. Maybe it will attract someone else. So we leave. So everyone left. And here was the thief's turn now. No obstacles at all. There was nobody claimed it. Now, by that time the thief came into the front row, what happened? He had a change of heart. He said, I have been sitting with the sages and yogis for quite some time. If they are rejecting this beauty of a woman and all this wealth, certainly they must be having something which is giving them higher happiness. I am a fool. Let me go and steal from there that happiness which they have. That way I'll become the most wealthy. Why should I take something which they have rejected? There must be something. So the import of this story is, this is what Sadhu Sangha or association of saintly person does to our consciousness. Initially we come with all our material desires, even to the temple, even to the congregation. But gradually, as we associate and we hear from these personalities who have nothing to do with material life, we heard, His Holiness Devamrita Swami give an excellent class the other day, completely out of his realizations. We heard yesterday Vrajakrishna Prabhu gave such a wonderful class, a highly realized soul. So we heard Urmila Mataji, excellent classes she gave, all this out of their realizations. So constantly associating with these devotees, hearing from them, then gradually, even if we come to the temple for the wrong reasons or with a lot of our garbage, then gradually we will get purified and not desire those things which we originally wanted, even devotional life to give us. So gradually they will make us associate with that Paramatma in their heart, who is seated in everyone's heart. So here, coming to the conclusion of today's topic, so here Lord Kapil Dev is instructing Devahuti how to the process of meditating on the Paramatma by concentrating on the tip of the nose. But for us, what is the process? What do we concentrate? Do we concentrate on the tip of our own nose? Is that the process which Prabhupada gave for Kali Yuga, for all of us? Obviously not. So rather, we concentrate on the tip of the toe of the Lord. That is the difference. Rather than concentrating on the tip of the nose, for us, this is the process which is given, which is Bhakti Yoga. Or Dhyana Yoga, which is in Bhakti. Bhakti Yoga has got components of Jnana, Dhyana, Karma, everything. We all know that, having studied the Bhagavad Gita. So it is Yoginam Api Sarvesham. If you see, this is the highest yoga that we are into. So the sages in Bhagavatam also it is mentioned. Dhyana Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pashyanti Yam Yoginaha. Those yogis whose goal is that Paramatma, who are meditating on that, a devotee automatically meditates on that in Bhakti Yoga, directly. So we don't have to go to the tip of our nose. So how to meditate in Bhakti Yoga? What is the Bhakti Sutras tell us? The Bhakti Sutras tell us that our meditation should be from the feet, lotus feet of the Lord to the lotus face of the Lord. From the feet to the top. Now, specifically talking about the feet, how to meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. Some few aspects are mentioned in the Shastras which interested me when I was doing up some reading on this. The feet of the Lord, when we meditate on the feet of the Lord, it breaks our barriers to meet the Lord. So ultimately we have to meet the super soul. So we meditate on the feet of the Lord, which breaks the barriers and takes us to the innermost chambers. Now the feet of the Lord also has got some symbols which aid us in getting detached from material life and in meeting Him. The toe of the Lord, it is mentioned, carries the chakra. It is mentioned that this chakra is the Sudarshan chakra. By meditating on this Sudarshan chakra, all the six enemies of the mind, what are the six enemies of the mind? Lust, anger, envy, greed, pride, illusion. All these six enemies of which capture the mind, they are all destroyed by meditating on the chakra, on the lotus feet of the Lord. Then in the middle finger of this toe, then there is a lotus. First we saw the chakra, now there is a lotus. Now, it is not enough to get rid of the contamination. That is not the goal of Bhakti Yoga. The goal of Bhakti Yoga is not just to become sinless. The goal of Bhakti Yoga has to develop love of Godhead. That is the goal. So therefore, only detachment from the material world is not enough. That's a necessary condition, but it's not a sufficient condition. One has to develop attraction to the Lord. And that happens when we meditate on the lotus. Because when the bee-like personality sees the lotus, then spontaneously the bee goes and associates itself with the lotus. So that is the significance of the lotus on the feet of the Lord. The Lord's form, especially this lotus, provides the jiva the eagerness to approach Him. So many times our sadhana slackens because we lose our eagerness to attain Krishna. We see our time and again, at least in my life I have noticed that, continue to notice that, I lose my eagerness to see the Lord. And then again after some days, you know, maybe the association of a saintly personality, some lecture by His Holiness Devamrita Maharaj or some other spiritual master, again it reawakens that. Again we go back. So, the form of the Lord increases our eagerness. But in the past, because of our past conditioning, because of so many sins that we have done in our life, it prevents us from developing this eagerness. So, this lack of eagerness to attain the Lord is like a mountain. It's like a mountain which blocks us from cultivating our eagerness to see the Lord. And that is why the Lord has got a thunderbolt in His feet. through this thunderbolt, what does a thunderbolt do? The thunderbolt cracks this mountain into small dust, which you can pass through that mountain very easily after that. There is no mountain left after that. So, a combination of chakra, the lotus, and this thunderbolt enables us to attain the Lord. And there is also a gourd in the Lord's lotus feet, if you see. A gourd is something which is a weapon or an instrument by which the elephant can be controlled. Okay? And what is this elephant refers to? What is the elephant within us?
Mind.
Our mind. It doesn't move. It's very firm. I want to be like that. Don't give me instructions. No? So that is why the Lord has a gourd in his lotus feet. So, buddhi is guiding, but the mind is rebelling. Therefore, when we turn our focus or attention on the gourd, which is there in the Lord's lotus feet, then that aspect of the rebelling mind is also controlled. So these are some of the aspects of the super soul, and how we saw how the mind works, we saw what is the importance of super soul. We also saw how Lord Kapildev is systematically taking his mother through a journey by which, you know, he can finally make her meditate on the super soul. And we also saw how, you know, in our own lives, because we are practitioners of Bhakti Yoga living in Kali Yoga, what have our acharyas, how have our acharyas guided us in terms of how we should be meeting our super soul. So I'll stop here and ask if any questions, comments or corrections. Yes, ma'am.
Last thing first, what's your reference for the progression of our progression through the center of the monks and the monks?
It's a Narada Bhakti Sutra. Narada Bhakti Sutra.
Oh, really? Sorry.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Possibly, it could be Madhuri. When I heard this rendition of Hridayananda Maharaja's book, the speaker mentioned that the senses under the control of the time, which is I think probably 365 days in a year, represent collectively these soldiers. So, that's what I understand. But I haven't read the book myself. I don't know. Have you read that book, Madhuri, of Hridayananda Maharaja? Maybe we'll get better understanding by reading the book. Yeah, so it is, the short answer is it is not practicable. That is what the acharyas have said. Because if you go to the previous verses and see, it is, even in this verse I think it is mentioned. See what is said. When the mind is perfectly purified by this process of yoga, then one should concentrate on the tip of the nose. So we have to ask ourselves, is our mind perfectly purified? No. So then we can't even start this process. So there is a condition for doing this practice. So, I mean, most of us will agree that, you know, the struggle is going to continue till the death. You know, and I don't know how many more lifetimes it will take. But so this is not very practical. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada has given us the this verse which of the acharyas. Was it Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam? Tat Paratmena Nirmalam? Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchase. So we don't rely on this. You know, we can't get our mind purified. So the only way of purifying our mind and senses is to dovetail it in the fire of devotional service. So yes, this process is effective, but we don't have the adhikar to follow this process. how do we take?
When we have discomforts in our body, in bhakti yoga, so how do we deal with...
Okay, so our the brahmacharis in Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir are the best examples of this. Okay, so many of them struggle with poor health, but still, by the guidance of the temple and by the support of the temple, they are going for various, many of the brahmacharis are going for various yoga programs. I know many of them because our Adi Purush Prabhu and myself, we are partners in Kesar training here in South Melbourne. So the brahmacharis try to, lead the disciplined life in terms of controlling, in terms of what we take as food and what we eat, what we don't eat. There is a regulation that is being followed. Plus there is exercise. And this is true of many temples. In fact, His Holiness Devamrit Maharaj is one of the best examples of that. Who always, I heard that Maharaj never fails to do his yoga in the morning. Despite his very busy schedule, so Maharaj takes care of his health. And that's not because of some bodybuilding or something like that, but because they are self-realized souls who understand that, they understand the importance of taking care of this body and not to abuse this body, because this is a vehicle for self-realization. So there is a seriousness which is associated with, in terms of taking care of the body, which is aligned to that goal of self-realization. So there is no substitute for exercise. Now, I'm not the right person sitting on the Vyasasana and telling this, because I myself don't do much of exercise. And I have been chastised by many devotees for not doing that. I'm doing some humble attempts, but I'm not very disciplined, in terms of eating or in terms of exercising. But yes, by associating with such exalted devotees, then at least we kind of get reminded again and again that we have to take care of this body. And taking care of this body is all about what we put in our mouth, what time we eat, what we eat, how much we eat, all that decides. And then how we, are we doing some kind of exercise, some asana, some pranayam. Many devotees do that in the congregation. So probably, we have to get in touch with them and get inspired. I am at least the wrong person, I can tell you 100%. I don't do any of that properly. I don't know whether I answered your question or not.
But my question was, when we are already in pain or some disease or suffering, and it becomes very difficult to concentrate on the lotus feet of the Lord.
Yes.
Because your mind is always dwelling on the body.
On the body,
You are trying to tell your mind that you are not this body or this soul.
Yes.
So
the example which I gave was also that. It's not that, so some people do proactively, some people do reactively. For example, I am an example of doing reactively, because I have got this knee problem. Therefore, then one day Goparandesh Prabhu and Arjun Sakha Prabhu told me that, Jai Prabhu actually, Jainitai Prabhu, he told me about this Kesar training. So I said, okay, let me go there. Then I realized that, I had to build some strength, otherwise I can't sit like this for a long time. Then it starts really hurting. So if we know it reactively, the pain has already started, then we have to go for repair therapy. But if we are proactive, we will not lead ourselves to that indisciplined life which leads us to that point where we are already in pain. Of course, we have to understand that, whether we do exercise or whether we don't do exercise, beyond a point in time, all the gates are going to close one after the other. That is a fact of life. But that is at least not because of abuse, that's because of the natural, the way in which Providence has designed our body. One day it's going to fail. And at that time, we can't do anything about it. We can't. No amount of exercise or yoga or pranayama is going to give us eternality in this world. So at some point in time, some organ will start failing. It is true for the even highest, Ashtanga yogi who is currently living in contemporary life. Maybe somebody will live for 300 years, 400 years, or go to the Himalayas and live for 1000 years. But, it's said in Bhagavad Gita, Ajanma Bhuvana Loka Punaravarti. Everyone has to finally leave this body and then go to some other existence and again take new body and keep coming again and again. So that we can't prevent. So obviously that is the whole idea of our movement. There is a movement called as Art of Living, which all of us know about, which also teaches pranayam. And our movement is the Art of Dying. So we are being told how to, how to understand the inevitability of death. And then prepare our consciousness, because at that time, Prabhupada's the famous verse is there, Kafavata Pitta Kanthava Loka. Prabhupada says that, at that time when the bile, mucus, everything is rushing up, we will realize that now no amount of yoga, nothing is going to do. Nothing is going to work. And at that time, it is said that the pain of death is like so many millions of scorpions biting our body. So at that time, the only prayer is what? That, oh my dear Lord, please remember whatever I did for you when my health was cooperating with me. And now I can't do anything else. The only thing probably that time we can do, only thing, that too probably, is chant the holy name attentively. We cannot, you know, do some, you know, deity worship at that point in time, you know, when our body is not cooperating. But in our mind, at least we can take smaran of the Lord and take the shelter of his feet when leaving the body. So that's the best that we can do. And it is said that, yes, you know, obviously Prabhupada said that at that time, if you have served a Vaishnava nicely in our lifetime, then at that time by Vaishnava's prayers we will be delivered. Even if we can't remember in that state, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we will still be delivered. Because the Lord takes into account how we have led our life when we had a healthy body and mind. So we have to build that bank account so it can be used at that time. Spiritual bank account, if you like. Someone else had a comment? All right, I'll stop here because it's 9:15. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanand.